We've been going through Genesis and through the life of Joseph and his brothers, and we've reached Genesis chapter 49 tonight, so this is the penultimate time we will open the Bible, this section, for this series. Genesis chapter 49. By the way, I know children, there's a number of this worksheet. We do have some worksheets here. If anyone's here and would like one, I've still got another copy here. If anyone would like a worksheet, this will fill in the gaps. If anyone is interested, I'm going to put it here. You can be brave and come and grab it if you like. Now, I want to do things just slightly differently tonight. I'm going to read the first part of Genesis 49, and I'm going to do the first part of my sermon. Then we're going to sing, and then I'm going to repeat with the second part. And let me know afterwards whether you found that a help or a hindrance. If it's a hindrance, fine, we won't carry on with it. But if you find this a helpful thing to do, just to break things up a little bit, let me know, and we'll see how it goes tonight. So for now, I'm just going to read Genesis 49, the first 12 verses. Genesis 49, verse 1. And Jacob called his sons and said, "Gather together, that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days. Gather together and hear, you sons of Jacob, and listen to Israel your father. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Unstable as water, you shall not excel, because you went up to your father's bed, then you defiled it. He went up to my couch. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Instruments of cruelty are in their dwelling place. Let not my soul enter their council. Let not my honour be united to their assembly. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they hamstrung an ox. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Judah, you are he whom your brothers shall praise. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He bows down, he lies down as a lion. And as a lion, who shall rouse him? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people, binding his donkey to the vine, and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He washes his garments in wine, and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are darker than wine, and his teeth whiter than milk." So Genesis 49, Jacob is on his deathbed, and he's giving this long deathbed pronouncement to his sons, to his 12 sons. But our society doesn't do deathbed pronouncements very well. When we read in the newspaper about someone dying, often we're told, you know, they died at home, the family was surrounding them, and you'll get an obituary telling us about their achievements, but you don't get a report of someone's last words. And also, you don't, when you do, it's not usually like this. This is a very long, a whole chapter of Jacob's blessings, and he's clearly thought about it, planned what he's going to say to all his sons. Culturally, we're just not used to this sort of thing. We don't gather our sons around us and pronounce these detailed blessings in the way that Jacob is here. But I think sometimes we're missing out because of that. We're missing out because often in death, people gain a perspective that they don't have in life. Things just are brought home to us when we're on our deathbeds, and it's something that's worth hearing. So it's worth listening to Jacob in these verses. Now Jacob in verse 1 tells his son, he says, "I'm going to tell you what's going to befall you in the last days." he's telling them what's going to happen to them in the future. Now, that's not just a father giving predictions, saying, you're not going to amount to much, are you? Or, this one here, he'll go a long way. I can see he's going. It's not just him guessing, predicting. Jacob here is prophesying. He's speaking with confidence because God is involved. God's giving him words. And actually what we're going to see as we see, look through what happens with these brothers in the future, his words are accurate. They come to pass. Now that's one thing he's doing. Jacob's telling them in verse 1 that what's going to befall them. The other thing, I know we didn't read verse 28, but if you move forward to verse 28, it tells us the other thing he's doing. We've got to take this seriously when it says, he blessed them. He blessed each one according to his own blessing. Now the ESV translates that final phrase a bit differently. It says, blessing each with the blessing suitable to him. What we're going to see is that each brother receives a different blessing, but they are all blessings. And we've got to hold that in our heads as we go through this tonight. They are all blessings. Again, that can make us feel a little bit uncomfortable because traditionally, in our day and age, you would split things, you would give the same blessing to all your children. Unless you've fallen out with one of your sons or daughters, unless one of them really annoyed you and you cut them out of the will, often you think, well, I should be fair. I should give the same blessing to all of them. But Jacob here isn't afraid to give each one a blessing that is suitable to them. So, Jacob is blessing them, and each blessing is different. Just when we think about that for a moment, that is the case for us as well with God's blessings. Each one of us here tonight has been blessed in different ways. We've got perhaps different family situations, different financial positions, different health. There are some blessings perhaps I have that you don't have. And there are some blessings that you have that I don't have. We do receive some different blessings. That is how God works. And that's what he's doing here. It's the right blessing for the right brother. I'll say one more thing before we start looking at the blessings. The blessings these brothers are given relate to them becoming a nation. Again, verse 28 tells us that. We've got to notice, it says there, all these are the 12 tribes of Israel. Jacob knows his sons are going to form the tribes of a nation. So the blessings that they get given are suitable for a nation to flourish and grow. And we'll see that as we go through this. So, blessings. Here's the first one. Here's the first point if you're taking notes. Sometimes blessings take the form of discipline. And that's verses 3 to 7. Sometimes blessings take the form of discipline. Now in these verses, we've got three brothers. Reuben, Simeon, and Levi. First is Reuben. Verses 3 and 4, Reuben comes first because he is, in verse 3, he's the firstborn. And Jacob starts off very positively. He says, you're my might, the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. It's all sounding good for Reuben at this point. He's going to get something pretty special. But actually, verse 4, he's unstable as water. As unstable as water. Water's not solid, you can't rely on water. And Jacob links it with Reuben back to what he did years ago. So in verse 4, you went up to my father's bed and then you defiled it. If you want to look that up, that's back in Genesis 35:22. Reuben went and lay with his father's concubine, maid, Bilhah. That's what Reuben did. So Jacob says, you will not excel, in verse 4. That's what happens with the tribe of Reuben. As you read through it in the Old Testament, that's what you discover. If you want another Bible, I will be throwing out a few Bible verses tonight to show some of these things. Judges chapter 5, verses 15 and 16. So this is much later on in the Old Testament. Deborah, one of the judges, sings a song rejoicing about a victory they've won over the enemy. notice what she says about the tribe of Reuben. She says to Reuben, why did you sit among the sheepfolds to hear the pipings for the flocks? In other words, what she's saying there is, when we needed you, when the battle was raging, the tribe of Reuben stayed at home. In other words, what Jacob says is going to happen, happens. Reuben is not a brave, courageous tribe. Reuben does not excel. And then you've got Simeon and Levi. They're dealt with together in verses 5 to 7. And the reason they're dealt with together is because they committed their crime together. Their crime in verse 6, they slew a man. They hamstrung an ox. And that takes us back to Genesis chapter 34. Their sister Dinah is abused by a man named Shechem. And it's Simeon and Levi who take the charge against, who lead the charge against the man who did it. They take their swords, Genesis 34 verse 25, they head into the city, and they not only kill the man who did it, they kill his father, and they kill all the men there. And at the time, Jacob is furious about this. He says, this wasn't right, this wasn't appropriate. So in verse 7, he tells us what's going to happen to them. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Again, that's what happens to those two tribes. When they come into the promised land and the land of Canaan is carved up and given to lots of different tribes, Simeon is only given a very small portion of the land. And it's given, you can imagine, it's like an island, a very small portion, surrounded by Judah, which was huge. And what happens over the years to come is Simeon just becomes assimilated. It just becomes a part of the tribe of Judah. It just disappears. It's scattered. And the tribe of Levi, the tribe of Levi is the only tribe that isn't given any portion of the land at all. What Jacob's saying here comes to pass. Now again, we've got to take seriously the words in verse 28. Jacob is blessing his sons. But I don't know about you, when you read this, you think, how can that be a blessing? What's going on here? But actually, all of God's dealings with his children are blessings, acts of kindness. There are lots of people in this world who God just leaves to themselves. He doesn't intervene in their lives. He doesn't prompt them to cry out to them. He doesn't work in their hearts to produce more and more holiness and being more and more like Jesus Christ. But there are some people who he is working in. I had the blessing of parents who disciplined me as a child. I have memories of that. Memories of being told no. They didn't always get it right. My favourite supposed disciplinary act was when I stole a little bit of sugar. And my parents said, right, as a punishment, you're going to eat a whole bowl of sugar. You'll learn never to do that again. It was the best punishment I ever had. And I never got that punishment again. Strangely enough, it didn't seem to work. But nevertheless, my parents wanted to discipline me. And at the time, I didn't enjoy it. But actually, that was a blessing in my life. Because we learn some things only as we are being disciplined. That was what Reuben and Simeon and Levi needed. They committed awful, sinful acts. They needed to be humbled. And Jacob's saying, that's what God is going to do. That's how he produces fruit and holiness in your life. God disciplines his children. Maybe that's how what you feel like is going on in your life at the moment. Maybe you feel like you can see your pride and you feel like God is humbling me right now. That's what he's doing. Maybe like Reuben, he's showing you your immorality. He's forcing you into a place where you have to deal with it because you just can't ignore it anymore. Maybe like Levi, and Simeon. You've got these fits of rage. And it leads you to do things you know you shouldn't do. Maybe you haven't killed someone like they did. And now God's forcing you to confront it and deal with it. Well, that hurts. It could be painful. But God's blessing us as he does that because he's making us more like Jesus. Now, secondly, tonight, sometimes blessings take the form of honour. And that's Judah in verses 8 through to 12. Now, as we've read through these chapters in the life of Joseph and his brothers, Judah pops up every now and again. And you see in the chapters a real change in him. He starts off as a hypocrite, self-absorbed, selfish, but he changes to becoming a leader amongst his brothers, a man of real integrity and honour. Jacob's seen that change in his son. And that's reflected in what he says to Judah now. He says in verse 8, Judah's going to be the one his brothers praise. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. He's got people looking up to him. Verse 9, it says Judah is a lion's whelp. It's really just a symbol of strength and courage and boldness. Judah's going to be that sort of person, full of boldness. Courage. Now, some of the blessings he receives from his father here are ones he's going to experience personally. So in verse 8, when it says his hand will be on the neck of his enemies, I suspect that just means he's going to experience success himself against his enemies. But then there are also blessings that his descendants will receive. So verse 10, it tells us about a scepter. And it says, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet. The scepter, the staff that a king carries round with him. It's a symbol of royalty, a symbol of ruling. And he's talking as well about someone who's going to be a lawgiver, someone who has the right to make the rules for everyone. It says as well, he will have the obedience of the people. In verse 10. Now you start to see that in Judah's descendants in some of the Old Testament kings. David and Solomon come from the tribe of Judah. They rule. They have this prophecy fulfilled in them. They hold the scepter. They're lawgivers. They're the kings. They rule over Israel. But ultimately, these verses are talking about Jesus Christ. Revelation chapter 5, verse 5, it talks about Jesus as the Lion of the tribe of Judah. Jesus will come from that tribe. He is a descendant of Judah. He's the Lion of the tribe of Judah. That's why when C.S. Lewis writes the Narnia Chronicles, he writes the Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. That's why you've got Aslan there as this picture of a lion. It comes from there. It's the Lion of Judah. That's a great honour for Judah, knowing that his great, 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 and so many greats grandson is going to be the saviour, the one who's been promised to come. You don't have to watch the Olympics for very long before you. Usually, when someone wins a gold medal, they do an interview sometimes with one of the parents of the person who's just won, and the parents are just bursting with child with what their child has achieved, winning this gold medal. Sometimes you see a winner saying, I just wish mum or dad would still be alive to witness this. Sometimes the parents aren't there, they're not on the scene anymore. Judah gets that privilege. He gets that honour of seeing into the future and seeing what's going to happen with his family. That's a tremendous honour. A great privilege that God gives him. Sometimes God does that for us as well. Sometimes he shows us how he's using us. Think about some of the things you do for the Lord. There are all sorts of ways in which we can serve him. Quite a lot of the time, we have no idea what impact it has. We have no idea what it is done, what it has done to serve the kingdom of Jesus Christ. But sometimes God gives us little glimpses. Sometimes someone says something and we realise there is a difference. God is working. God did take my words. Something's going on in their life. I can see it now. Again, there's another valuable lesson we can learn from Judah as well. Whatever we've done in the past, whatever mistakes we've made, that doesn't consign us to a second best life, a life of misery. Judah gets this great blessing from God in spite of all he's done. He gets it because he repented, because he turned and he sought to honour the Lord in how he lived. We're going to pause at this point now and sing, and then we're going to look at the rest of the chapter. So we're going to stand and sing now, "As the Deer Pants for the Water." We'll stand and sing this one, and then we'll carry on reading the rest of Genesis.
So move on to point number 3 of 4 for tonight. Sometimes blessings take the form of abilities and opportunities.
Abilities and opportunities. And that's verses 13 to 21. But I also want to include Benjamin, who's in verse 27 there as well, because the last part will focus on Joseph. God gives all sorts of good gifts to his people. And in these different brothers, we get a little taste, a bit of an insight into the sorts of things he's doing. So Zebulun, back in verse 13, is going to live by the sea and will be a haven for ships. He's going to benefit from sea trade. And that's going to enrich the rest of the nation through that. Issachar in verse 14. Well, some of the wording, exactly what it means, a little bit hard to figure out there. But Issachar is certainly strong. A strong donkey, we're told. But also he sees that rest is good and he starts to lay down. And he settles and rests too soon. Dan, verses 16 and 17, Dan is given the opportunity and the ability to act as a judge. In fact, the name Dan actually means judge. And again, in the Old Testament, you see that when you read about Samson. What tribe was Samson from? The tribe of Dan. And Samson was a judge, the last great judge in that book. But we're also told that the tribe of Dan will be unreliable. Verse 17, a serpent, by the way, a viper that bites the horse's heel so its rider shall fall backwards. Gad, verse 19, will be a tribe that's always fighting, and in particular a tribe of raiders. That's what comes through in the original wording. And that's what happens again. The tribe of Gad become known for its military might, for its strength in the battle. One example of that is in 1 Chronicles 12. Just after David becomes king, a bunch of Gadites come and support him in battle. And here's how they're described in 1 Chronicles 12, verse 8. They're described as mighty men of valour, men trained for battle, who could handle shield and spear, whose faces were like the faces of lions and were as swift as gazelles on the mountain. The Gadites become well known for fighting. Verse 20, Asher, the tribe of Asher, will produce bread and royal dainties. They're going to be the expert bakers in the tribe. And if you've been following the Asher's bakers over in Northern Ireland, well, that's where they got their name from. They're aware of that verse and they chose it from the Bible. Naphtali, verse 21. Now, we're not quite sure where it says there he uses beautiful words. It could be that he bears beautiful forms. So either he produces beautiful offspring or he produces beautiful words. But either way, the point is the same. He has a unique contribution to make to the life of Israel. And then Benjamin, finally, verse 27. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. Talks about dividing the spoil. Again, this is a picture of military prowess. The tribe of Benjamin are going to be great fighters. And again, in 1 Chronicles 12, you see the Benjamites demonstrating their strength in various ways. Remember, Jacob's thinking about how these tribes are going to function together as one nation. So you can start to see the picture that's being built. Each tribe has something unique, something different to bring to the table. Whether it's fighting ability to defend the nation, whether it's sea trade and all the things that come from other countries, all these exotic spices and wood and all those sorts of things. Whether it's bakers bringing food to enjoy, wisdom, poetry. See this long list of things that they all bring to the nation. What does that mean for us? What good does this do us today? Well, we've got to see that translating for us into the church. That when Jesus calls us and saves us, he gives each of us unique gifts and opportunities to serve him. And we do it for the good of the church and for the glory of God. It would be pointless, wouldn't it, if the tribe of Asher baked all those beautiful croissants and things and then just threw them away. That'd be pointless. What a waste of their gifts and the skills God's given them. You've ever seen it on MasterChef. I always think on MasterChef, they cook this wonderful plate of food and then they have about one spoonful of it and they leave the rest. What are you going to do with the rest of it? I'll have that. Such a waste. And yet, God gives us skills, abilities. Sometimes it's too easy for us to say, oh, God hasn't given me anything special. He has. Every one of God's children has gifts that we can use to enrich one another, to build each other up, to serve the church of Jesus Christ. And sometimes those gifts just lie dormant and unused. But they shouldn't do. God's given them to us. If you're not sure what your gifts and your opportunities to serve him are, ask someone you know, ask another believer you know and trust. And beware as well, I might ask you that question sometime soon as well. So you need to get your answer ready. And if you're not sure, we can talk about that further. Every believer has gifts that we can use in service for the church. Then fourthly, finally, sometimes blessing takes the form of fruitfulness. That's verses 22 to 26, and that's Joseph. Joseph has the most said about him, and that shouldn't really surprise us because we know he's Jacob's favourite. But he gets this long description when so many others just get a few words said about them. Jacob says in verse 22, Joseph is a fruitful bough by a well. It's this picture of the branches running over the wall, these huge pieces of luscious fruit there. Joseph's already been fruitful in the sense that there's been a famine, and he's the one who's fed countless people, not just his own family, but people in Egypt, people from around the world, all come to him for bread. But there's much more fruitfulness that's going to come from his tribe as well. Remember Joseph's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. Ephraim in particular is going to be a central tribe in the nation of Israel for centuries to come. One of the biggest, one of the most important of all the tribes. Verses 23 and 24, it describes what Joseph's gone through. When it talks about the archers and how they've grieved him and shot at him, I think that's just a metaphor, a picture for what Joseph's gone through. That he's had his brothers out to get him, then slave traders take him off to Israel, and then Potiphar's wife, and he's put into prison. And, you know, all the things that have been done to him. He's had all these bows and arrows that have been fired at him. But, verse 24, he's still strong. The arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. In verses 25 and 26, there's this comprehensive blessing. The word blessing appears time and time again there. So you get the point. Joseph is getting the lion's share of the blessing. It says he'll receive the blessings of the breasts and of the womb. So that, see that idea of fruitfulness again. This time it's fruitfulness in that he's going to produce offspring, children. Verse 26, again, he's going to have a crown on his head. Well, the nation of Israel was fruitful, and it multiplied, and it had children that lived under God's blessing. What's the fruit for us today? In what sense are we fruitful today? For Joseph, the fruit was having children that it's talking about, or at least one of the fruits. The church's fruit today, in the New Testament, it talks about the fruits of the Spirit, that God brings about acts of love and faithfulness and patience and gentleness in the lives of his children. God makes our work fruitful. He makes our lives fruitful in all sorts of ways. And that fruit is a sign that the Holy Spirit is working in our hearts and in our church. So, let's draw this to a close. We talked about these different blessings this evening. There's one or two more things I just need to say. Firstly, there's this. If you're not a believer, there are lots of things that God has blessed you with tonight. But if you don't acknowledge there from him that he has brought these blessings into your life, all of that is going to count for nothing. That's a tragedy. Actually, our blessings increase. They multiply when we follow Jesus Christ. As believers, we receive different blessings. Some of them overlap. Every believer has the blessing of faith in Jesus Christ. But then some of them are going to be different. Your blessings may not be mine, and mine may not be yours. Maybe right now you're being blessed by being humbled. God is disciplining you, dealing with things that need to be dealt with in your life. Things that are getting in the way of your relationship with God. Maybe some of us tonight are being blessed because we're seeing little insights into what God is doing through us. He's using me to build his... What an amazing thing that is, to see some little glimpse of what he's doing through something I'm doing or saying. God gives each of us different gifts, and then he opens up different ways that we can serve him. God's blessings, though, whatever they are evidence that God loves us. That's what we've got to take away from this. Maybe there's different blessings, but they're all evidence that he loves us, that he cares for us as his children. Because all of these brothers are still part of a nation that inherited the promised land. They all go to Canaan. They all get into the promised land. And remember, we need to see one more final thing too. All of Jacob's sons are the holders of the promise that God has given to bless them and the nation. And in so far as they're in that role, that what these brothers are actually doing is they're showing us something of the character of Jesus Christ. We can see that in different ways here. Jesus will be punished, chastised, except unlike Reuben and Simeon and Levi, it'll be for sins that are not his own. Jesus is the greater son of Judah, the lion of the tribe of Judah. Jesus is the one who ushers in a great age of enrichment for the church. Not of seafarers and bakers' stuff, but some much more wonderful blessings than that. And Jesus is the greater Joseph as well. Jesus brings about far greater fruit in the church than Joseph ever will. So God's blessings to you, whatever they are in your life today, they are blessings. And we're to receive them in that way. And to look out for them. Sometimes we don't even spot them. But they're evidence that he loves us and that he cares for us, that we are his children. Well, we're going to stand and sing our final hymn now. It's number 568. If you're using a hymn book. 568, will your anchor hold in the storms of life? I'm going to stand and sing 568.